There's a word that appears in the Gospels, but it only appears one time. One time, in fact, maybe even in the whole of the New Testament. It's a little Greek word, and it's the word leros. Leros. There's a polite translation of that in the biblical text. It's the phrase, an idle tale. Leros means an idle tale. I say it's a polite translation because it's, well, frankly, really kind of a derogatory term. It's really a way to call some report or some person and be dismissive about them. It's kind of a term of contempt, really. It's to devalue what someone has said. It's a little bit like, you know, rolling your eyes and saying, yeah, right. They said that about the women. They said that about the women who had experienced the risen Christ. They come back with their report that Jesus has risen from the dead. Oh, leros, was the reply. Now, women at the time, of course, were not regarded as equal. Women at the time, of course, were not regarded as reliable. They couldn't testify in court. They weren't seen to be on the same sort of status as were the men. And this report of Jesus being raised seemed silly. Fantasy. Seemed like hysterical and shrill report of silly girls. And so they ignored the women. After all, these men had other concerns, pressing concerns. The temple guard was still looking for them, was still the townspeople were still speculating on who were those who were friends of Jesus and who were those who weren't. The Jewish leaders by now have figured out a sort of convenient way to contrive or at least to cooperate with Roman rule, and all seem to be at peace. Oh, they had a lot on their minds in that room. They had a lot on their minds in that locked room, in that private room in which they had gathered. They were all objects of an ongoing investigation. All of them had to be concerned about their livelihood and their future. After all, it's at this point in the text when, wait a minute, where's Judas? He's got all the money. What are we going to do? Should we go back to fishing? Should we go back to carpentry or farming? I think their stress meters were up about as high as they could go. The women are telling us these things that are hard to believe. I think it was tough. Charlie Brown says that there's no problem so big that I can't run away from it. I wonder if they wanted to run. Wanted to just run away. Because by now the anxiety had become pervasive and it just hung in the air. They had to have been exhausted, not eating right, not sleeping right. These folks were a mess. Brain function had sort of sizzled down to the amygdala, that part of your noggin that controls your threat response, your fight and flight, that part of your brain that makes your heart beat faster and your nostrils flare. It's useful, but when you get stuck there, you're a mess. These periods of extended stress, prolonged anxiety. Have you ever had those times in your life? Raise your hand if you've ever woken up in the middle of the night worried about something. Keep it up if you were awake last night worried about something. Oh, see? Yeah. It's real. It happens in us. Nervous moments that stretch, nervous moments that stretch into nervous days. Nervous moments that stretch into nervous weeks or even nervous months. Chronic and unrelenting. Garrison Keillor says that Easter is that time of year when Christians ask, do I really believe all this stuff? And if so, why do I live this way? I think he means it for it to be a little bit fun. But why indeed? Why indeed do we live this way, as if I could control my life? Why do we live this way, as if I could control my experiences or my family or my church? I wonder, why do I live this way, as if I had something to hide or something to lose? Scared of someone taking my stuff? Scared of someone embarrassing me? Scared of somebody trying to change things? Hoarding and hiding becomes the standard, the default position. Hiding and hoarding, the criteria for making our decisions and conducting our relationships. That's how fear works. We've talked about this. Fear keeps me focused on whom? Me. Fear keeps me focused on my preferences and my stuff and my reputation. I think that's where Thomas was that day. He had rolled his eyes at the leros of the women, those hysterical women, those obviously unreliable women. He wanted to blame them for stirring all this up. After all, Thomas was himself the sophisticated one. He was the grown-up in the group, the one critical and discerning. Thomas was the one who saw himself as experienced and worldly and, well, unwilling to jump to conclusions. Like me. I think I'm that guy. Maybe you are too. Unwilling to take at face value the stories of others. Always ready with a grain of salt above the histrionics. But also secretly totally frightened that if it were all true, that it would change my life. That it would change the world. I don't know. Sometimes I imagine that I can see him standing there. I can see him standing there with his arms folded and maybe with one eyebrow raised. Jesus, alive? You gotta be kidding me. We've got to get our heads on straight. We've got to manage this situation and take control of these things. Get these gals to calm down and sort of rein in this crazy talk. Maybe now Thomas's hands are on his hips, and well, maybe now he's got one finger raised up and he's looking at Peter. Come on, you guys, let's get a grip. But I wonder if all the time, and I can see this in my mind's eye, if all the time that Jesus is actually standing right behind him, that Jesus is standing there waiting, all the time that Thomas is trying to take charge and be reassuring, all the time that Thomas is trying to calm his own fears in a thin attempt at pretending to be reasonable, and Jesus is just kind of waiting for this little pitch to get over with, and then Thomas turns and he melts and his eyes go wide and his hands fall to his side, and then his mouth drops open. And what does he say? My Lord and my God. I wonder if that's a first century Aramaic version of, oh my God. But Jesus doesn't scold him, does he? There's no condescension. There's no accusation. In fact, all he does is breathe. And he says, Shalom. Or in Greek, it's Eirene. He just says and breathes peace. And it changes the room. Fear turns to joy. Leros turns to discovery. And locked doors can't hold in the witness, can't hold in the wonder, can't hold in the willing of these disciples. You know, I wonder if Thomas is the reason that Jesus came back to that room the second time. Unwilling that even one of his beloved ones, even his biggest critic, that he would somehow be left out? Did Jesus come back to their hideout just to surprise Thomas, just to surprise us? Maybe like the shepherd who would leave behind the 99, what, to find the one. No idle tale anymore. Jesus is here, and I am not afraid. Jesus is here, and I am not afraid. Would you say that? Jesus is here, and I am not afraid. Now, I'll have you go one step further. Oh, here he goes, they're saying. Can you say it three times, but not to me or not to the air? Can you find three different people to whom you might say it? What if we took 90 seconds? Huh? Maybe you came with a beloved one. Great. But lean across a pew and say it to somebody you didn't come with. Jesus, let's try it together. Jesus is here, and I'm not afraid. Ready, go. Now, was that totally uncomfortable? Now you really are wishing you had those Tic Tacs, you know, for that. Jesus said, as the Father has sent me, so I send you. An Easter community of peace breathers. And I suppose we have to be honest and say that peace is not the absence of stress and anxiety. We know better. But maybe peace is the ability to pay attention. Even in the hardest moments, to pay attention to the presence of God. Joseph of Arimathea was asked, you know, you had such a nice tomb. Why did you give it away? Oh, he only needed it for the weekend, he said. Jesus is here, and I'm not afraid. Ready? Jesus is here, and I'm not afraid. Amen.